All right. I'm here with quite another special guest. Hello.
When did you start recording?
Like I said, a very special guest.
Why? I'm looking at the computer screen. When did you start recording?
In case you haven't guessed, we're talking to someone who's not native to this country.
Not native? What country?
What country are you from exactly?
China! I am from China!
That was China translation.
中国! 我从中国来的! 你都问我! 我是从哪儿来的? 你都问我!
So you came to America.
We both came to America at the age of 6. John came from Taiwan.
Can I say your name?
You can say my name.
And I came from mainland China. Communist China.
But where did you go?
Well, I think it's important to talk about where we came from.
Where did you come from?
I just said mainland China. Communist mainland China.
Fuzhou. You've always been very proud of Fuzhou, where you're from.
I liked Fuzhou fish balls. Fuzhou.
every Chinese buffet we go to, you make it a point to ask all the people there if they're from Fuzhou.
Oh, yeah.
Because apparently your people run the buffets.
No, well, because they are from Fuzhou. Not that they're not my people, but it's kind of that I'm doing sort of that very, I don't know, I think it's a very sort of kind of common thing to do to like have like a, oh, you're from that place too?
Province.
When it's like, no, town.
Town.
Yeah, like when it's like sort of nothing that's actually that significant. When you meet someone, it's like, if I met someone from San Diego, it's like, you know, per se, it's like,
oh,
I wouldn't be
San
like,
Diego.
Oh wow, you're from, like, I wouldn't share all these commonalities with them. Like, I'm not actually from San Diego.
You're from Fuzhou.
I'm from Fuzhou. But then, again, I'm not actually from Fuzhou because I didn't even know Fuzhou. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you remember something.
It's just kind of a weird, like, oh, these people are from the same place. I'm just like tripping out about that.
I see.
And which is another crazy comparison of how, like, someone like me got here from Fuzhou, and someone from, like, them got here from
You didn't
Fuzhou.
Come by boat?
I was not smuggled here, no.
How did you get here?
I mean, I came, you know, with a bow tie. I was not smuggled here. I came here by means of I came with my mom, because my dad came first.
Okay.
My dad left in 82 when I was 4. No, I think he left in 81. 81 when I was 3 or 4. And came here for 2 years and did the whole, like, school slash, like, he was sponsored. Because in 77, China had opened, in 80, China had opened its, like, policies toward China. U.S. had opened its policies toward China again.
And your dad was, like, he came for school, for grad school.
He came for grad school, but at the time, it's, like, you had to be a student. Like, it was because of the student visa that sort of got you here. And then it was, like, you know, then the goal is to, like, just work here and, you know, sort of thrive here. Then you can stay. Then you can become
a citizen! I'm a citizen!
The difference between China and Taiwan is that you can't get out of China unless you're a student. Whereas in Taiwan, you could just get a visa and go. But China, like, you can't really leave.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you're kind of very unique. In fact, I've only met one other person who's come from China during that time.
Yeah.
And he swam. Apparently, his parents swam across the strait to Hong Kong.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting... See, even that level of comparison of, like, where the Chinese people are from, like, to say, oh, I'm Chinese, it's, like, such a... There's so much to sort of... It's, like, all sort of interwoven, and you have to really dissect it to, like, understand it.
Well, I've heard that, like, for example, like, in the U.S., everybody who's like in Chinatown, like in New York and San Francisco, they're predominantly Cantonese.
Sure.
And that's why everybody, when you go to dim sum, is Cantonese.
Right.
And they're more working class. Whereas everybody who's from Taiwan or possibly China, they're all like the
yep.
more white collar people.
Yep.
And you guys are sort of an aberration. I don't know what you guys fall under exactly.
We are working class, but like really
high end working class.
High hard workers, like really climbers. My parents were such my parents were like
economic climbers.
My mom was like, you know, like the best piano player and the valedictorian of her school.
Hmm.
Like my dad also played a little piano, but he was known because he was like the best badminton player But he was, and he was also valedictorian of, like, they were both like the highest, like top whatever percentage of their schools, but from working class families. But from working class families that drilled the thing into you that, like, okay, you have to be the best in order to, like, make anything for yourself, you know? I mean, that's all China is, really.
It's obviously not genetic, since you're terrible at racket sports.
Yeah, I'm terrible at racket sports, and I'm not really a climber. I don't really see myself, like, I don't think I'm climbing as hard as my parents had to climb.
I think we should talk about, you always sort of talk about being poor when you came here,
mm-hmm.
and how that was a big influence on what happened to you.
Yeah.
Where did you come from?
A very different class. I came, what do you mean,
like,
where did I
come from? Like, where did you go?
We landed in Houston, because my dad was attending the University of Houston, and then we lived there for 3 years. And then we lived in, I don't even remember what the neighborhood was called. I went to Spring Branch Elementary School in Houston. And it was definitely a lower income neighborhood. I mean, not that I knew what that was then. I just thought, oh, we're in America. But it was a lower income neighborhood. I was friends with primarily Hispanics and blacks. And there was like a Taiwanese family that lived in our courtyard.
In your back room?
In our
what do you mean, your courtyard?
No, in our like, you know, it's like these apartment complexes that have courtyards, that have little playgrounds and stuff for kids, you know? Like, we call it the courtyard because it's like, you know, it's like four buildings. It's actually very sort of, it felt like a very Chinese thing to do because it's almost like communal living. Like, everyone, you know all your neighbors because, you know, you have to live. You have to, like, open your door to their sort of front walkway. So you know your neighbor. Everyone knows their neighbor.
But when you came here, you weren't around any Chinese people, obviously.
Fewer Chinese people. But in Houston, no, I was around plenty of Chinese people in Houston. Yeah, there's a lot of Chinese people.
And then you moved away to Wyoming.
Yeah, moved away to Wyoming.
Where there were no Asian people.
Oh, can I tell you about the story about what happened in Houston?
Oh, I'd love to hear a story about what happened in Houston.
So I was, like, 6 or 7. Keep in mind that, like, you know, this is when, you know, when we first came, obviously we didn't speak English, so.
Right.
It's like, so how do you speak English? Like, I feel like I came, like, in late August, and school started in early September.
Okay.
I feel like I came for, like, a week and, like, had to start school. Had to go to first grade.
Okay.
And it was like, wow, like, culture shock beyond culture shock, you know? It's like, what's happening? Like, what's everyone saying? Like, what's everyone, like, why are they acting this way, you know? And there was a black kid that moved into our complex,
mm-hmm.
and he was the only black kid at the time.
Okay.
And he was actually the first black person that I really encountered.
Of course.
In life.
Right.
I guess. And he was kind of an aggressive, like, he was a, you know, he had like a, like an angst, and I totally liked him, but then, like, I didn't like him because maybe I was threatened. I don't know. I felt strongly like weird. And basically when one day I said, like, he asked to come up and play with us because we didn't all really know each other yet.
Mm-hmm.
And like, so we weren't friends yet. So the first time, basically, the first interaction is this. He asked to come up and play and I said, no, you can't play with us.
Hmm.
He's like, why? I said, because you're black.
Wow.
And he kicked me in my shin.
And you're lucky he didn't kick you,
like,
somewhere else.
Fuck. I was like, what? I was like, why did he kick me in my shin? You know? And I went home. I was probably crying. I was probably like hurt and upset, like, physically, and just like what the hell? Like, what, you know? And I went to my mom. I'm like, mom, why did he do that to me? Like, you know?
Right.
My mom's like, well, what happened? You know, it's like, well, I was like, this is what happened. I just told him, hey, it's because you're, my mom's like, what? She's like, no, you can't tell people that. You can't basically discriminate people because of their race. Like, you have to say, like, okay, you have to play with everybody. And I'm like, oh, really?
That's funny that your mom knew that. Because how do they acclimate to?
Well, see, that's the thing. They don't. I feel like they also have to sort of perform a assimilation that somehow has to occur in one way, shape, or form. I feel like you can't really go to a place and not
Well, no, our parents just assimilate, like, on the surface, but behind the scenes at dinner parties, they talk shit all the time.
Right.
About everything.
Well, yeah,
and
right.
Else.
That's what I'm saying. It's like you have to learn a performed assimilation, and at the same time, you yourself are, you have your own, you know, viewpoints. And I'm really wondering if it's like, if that was a learned behavioral, like, tactic, like, for me to say, oh, you know, when I was six to this boy, like, you can't play with this because you're black. I don't know. Because my parents only, like, my parents never, they didn't have black friends. You know? They, like, stuck with the Chinese people. Like, I don't know. I feel like all of our parents are so racist.
They're all racist.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, at such an early age, you can learn racism.
Well, not only learn, but you just picked it up naturally. Congratulations.
I picked it up naturally?
Yeah. Because you were playing with, like, the white kids and the Hispanic kids and, like, kids of every other color, but you're like, oh.
Right.
Oh, this black kid is no good. Apparently, is what you were thinking.
Well, as a learned thing.
Right. Okay.
Had I been two, I don't think that's what I've been thinking.
You wouldn't care.
I mean, it wouldn't have been a social interaction.
Well, yeah, different. You never got picked on for being
the Chinese
Asian
kid
in school?
No. You
really?
Did?
Yeah.
In San Diego.
Very.
You came, let's get this straight. You came to San Diego.
I came to San Diego.
San Jose first?
For like 2 seconds, but then we came to San Diego.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, I got picked on, but not too much, not like physically picked on. I just got a lot of stuff stolen from me.
Right.
And I can't verbalize
anything. They disrespected
anything.
You.
They did diss me, it's true.
Right.
They did.
They dissed you.
Yeah.
Yo, they dissed you.
But I mean, I just remember having a lot of my toys stolen all the time.
Yeah.
And
that's a D.
And I didn't play with anybody.
What a D!
Yeah. I think the other thing is that I also had George.
Right.
So, I mean, it was
that's
easier because
experience.
even if we got, you know, hated on for any particular reason,
we
still
had
came out
each other.
Although, I don't remember us being supportive in any particular way. And in fact, I don't remember us necessarily hanging out that much when we were that young.
Uh-huh.
But I mean,
well, you were separated for a long time.
No, but like when we were six, like when we were in America,
right?
We went to the same kindergarten. We did the same, you know.
But
first
you were separated
class.
For such a long time. When were you separated from? Okay, maybe is that too much information?
No, that's not relevant. I mean,
can we divulge
relevant.
That information?
Sure. I mean, from the age.
Wait, what did you say? It is relevant or it's not?
It's
relevant?
Not that relevant because it's just a matter of. I think when you're two people, and the thing you have in common is obviously that you're the only Chinese kids in
mm-hmm.
school
mm-hmm.
and you don't speak English, like you naturally
mm-hmm.
gravitate towards each other. But because we were related, we weren't like friends.
Mm-hmm.
It's like she went to go
but
find
some,
her friends.
But I'm really curious about that now. Why weren't you friends?
We weren't friends just because it's like, oh, this is my sibling, so you go find your friends, I'll find my friends. If we happen to be two random Chinese people who've met on the playground at six, we would probably hang out.
So by your standard, you can't be friends with your siblings?
I think when you're that young,
by your logic.
Sometimes you don't want to. So I don't think we necessarily made a point to hang out with each other. Plus, she was a girl and I was a boy.
Right, yeah. See, and plus, you guys were separated.
I think you're dwelling on the separation a little too much.
I think the separation has... My theoretical standpoint, argument, is that the separation... and. For the record, can you state the date of the separation?
Probably for 6 months when we were around 3 years old.
Only 6 months?
Yeah. Which is a lifetime when you're three. That's
yeah.
a third of my life.
Yeah.
Okay. Or a six. Well, my point was that like when actually I came here, and I still do this now, because Chinese was my first language and also your first language,
mm-hmm.
like I think in Chinese if I start talking Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And so like my mindset, like I start throwing in like, oh, and like all these like little Chinese-isms
mm-hmm.
that I would never normally do.
You really start thinking in Chinese.
So when he went back to China, what did he do with his language? Like you said, he just performed them a lot.
Antique.
Like he would start.
Well, I'm just saying that I think the point he's making about performing is.
But you have to be
like
performer.
I hadn't realized that that's what he was doing with Chinese before we went to China. Like all the Chinese that I'd heard prior to that sounded really accurate and, you know, pronounced well.
So you're saying he sucked.
I sucked.
No. I'm not saying he sucked. I'm saying...
I really thought it was inadequate.
It broke it down for me, like, where his strengths were, where his weaknesses
because
were.
Because when you're...
Because what his strengths were, like, in the sort of... In the impersonation of the person he was speaking with.
Like you were
copying
them.
So as long as he
them.
Was around Chinese-speaking
mm-hmm.
people, his Chinese seemed to get better and better. But, like, there was this imprecision in his... Like, he did... With words he doesn't really know, he'll still... Like... I can't use words unless I totally understand them. This is true in English and in Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, like, it's probably why I don't speak when I'm, like, because I just can't use words unless I fully
mm-hmm.
feel like I understand them.
Yeah.
And when you perform, you have to be sort of, like, willing to, like, leap
read
across
the script.
That abyss of,
mm-hmm.
like, not knowing completely, but just
you can read.
Performing it.
Yep. You can just read it off.
So your theory is that if somebody who's more performative, like, they'll just grasp at the words and use them without necessarily knowing exactly how, but they're like, they'll approximately.
There's a little like messiness around the actual like execution of saying things. But that's good. Like that's what language is. So it's
mm-hmm.
a really good way to like practice and learn language. And that's where his strength is. But like his actual, like he has a weaker grasp on like actual meaning of words. And then his memory retention was like short. So it reminded me that in certain contexts he could like really hold on and absorb a lot and then he'd forget right away.
So the retention was actually big because you're just mimicking essentially
mm-hmm.
in a short term mimic.
Anytime I'm either doing a voice or an accent or even speaking in a different language, like this is why people tell me that I can speak Korean really well. They're like, oh wow, you have a really good Korean accent.
Well,
you
speak five phrases very
한국.
Well.
나는 중국 사람.
Yeah.
한국.
Like, you know, I still can't speak
안녕하세요.
Chinese to him.
안녕하세요.
I can't speak Chinese back
네.
to him.
왜
그래?
I feel really uncomfortable.
진짜?
You
want to
try it now?
No.
But 왜
그래?
But
one of the things I've told him about it that make it hard is that he is always speaking in all these accents.
나는
oh.
되게
It's like he can't just speak
나는 되게
like regular,
되게
normal Chinese. Like, he's like, can you imagine this? Like happening all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even think I've heard you speak in Chinese that often.
You haven't. People don't.
I mean,
you know what I really wonder? I really wonder what my accent is now. I always wonder, like, what accent am I doing, even when I'm talking normally. That's why it's a trip to hear my voice, because it's like...
Oh, in the Chinese?
Wow,
but you do, that's
sound,
a stylized
no, 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 no.
Chinese.
Even just speaking
hey,
English.
Like,
in English, anytime I'm talking, it's like, what...
Well, you have to get used to it.
...accent am I using? Because Chinese is my second language. I mean, I'm sorry, English is my second language. Chinese, in a way... Like, more developed Chinese
is
my second language.
Second language.
That's why it's really trippy to think about, like, what language do you think in?
That's the thing.
Is it even a language?
I think if you're an immigrant and something else is your first language, I would postulate that you think in that language.
Mm.
Like, if I want to speak in Chinese, I need to, not consciously, but almost consciously switch to Chinese
mm-hmm.
in order to speak it.
Mm-hmm.
Versus...
It just makes me think about... sort of the whole framework of thinking and the structure of thinking and how it relates to language. Do you have to think in a language? Can you just...
Well, this...
Is this another... What is this? Has this all been... This has been talked about already?
No, I'm just...
Smarter people than us have figured this out years ago.
Well, no, smarter people than us for
no,
sure.
I
wanted to make the connection to, like, therapy in
mm-hmm.
what language and then emotional language
mm-hmm.
in terms of primary, secondary. Like,
yeah, emotional language. Yeah.
I mean, that, like, Chinese was also my first language, but I was born here.
Mm-hmm.
And learned Chinese when I was 5, going to kindergarten. And, I mean, English is definitely my first language, but I can think in Chinese, but I can't conduct adult intimate relationships in Chinese.
What do you
because
mean?
Because... Like, by the time that I was developmentally able to have my own relationships with people, English had become my first language.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never actually developed my own relationship with people in Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Those relationships are the ones that I was born into, so, like, my primary family.
Mm-hmm.
And those relationships, I'm a child in them. Like, my identity is different
mm.
in each language.
Yeah, it's the same.
And so I can't... Have
so we are crippled in the same way.
This is the same with all of us. Yeah,
because we only speak
Chinese.
That's
why. Yeah, we only speak Chinese
where
to
we're
people
children.
Where we're children.
With whom
and
we're children. So
yeah, developmentally,
this
we're
really
all...
infantilizing effect of speaking Chinese for me. And if I, especially in intimate relationships where I have to be an adult and a sexual adult, like there's no way that I can speak Chinese and feel
You've been in intimate
sane.
Relationships with people who speak Chinese as their first language?
She's not talking about sexual relationships.
All right, but I mean like emotionally close enough or like...
Have I?
Yeah.
Are you asking if I have?
Yeah, you have.
No.
Yeah, but so like how do you know? Like, where Chinese is your main method of communication emotionally and intimately?
No, no, no. Chinese is not her main.
How do you know you can't
no,
do
No, I'm
it?
Saying that, oh.
Well,
I mean, she's
know?
A really good example.
But you can't talk back to him.
Yeah, like, it feels, it's very challenging for me to be with a Chinese person.
Well, that's a different story.
That's because you hate Chinese people.
Yeah.
I don't hate Chinese people.
You reject your Asianness. I mean, that's a whole different story.
No, but so the other connection I was making to the therapy thing is that my therapist brought up a very interesting point to me that when you have a second language which has become your first, and you do therapy in the second language
mm-hmm.
that is now your first language,
mm-hmm.
you can't get to the same level of the unconscious work. Unless you go do it
wow.
in the first language.
Wow.
So you need to do it in Chinese.
Wow.
So if I were brave enough, she said, I should be doing therapy in Chinese.
Yeah. Wow.
Which I'm not, and I don't have good enough Chinese to do that work. But
right. I wish I had good enough Chinese to do therapy.
But I felt like that was a really powerful
wow.
way to think about the, like, effect of the language you're thinking in to
mm-hmm.
do, like, reflective and self-aware work on yourself, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, our case is we all learned Chinese at the same age and got out of it at the same age.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just limited by vocabulary. We're limited by, like, we can't express ourselves.
It's not just vocabulary, though. I mean, vocabulary is just the number of words that you know.
Yeah.
But, like, the level of complex thinking that you are doing with,
mm-hmm.
when
oh, because
you're
of the brain
when
switch.
You're 20.
Yeah.
Oh,
is huge.
I mean,
and like
that's
the
way that I'm performing Chinese.
The
is
way
I'm performing
you,
Chinese from that of a young kid, you know?
Like language acquisition is not just the vocabulary is like such a small part of it, you know? Like language structure.
Yeah, there's very nuanced things that you sort of just get, you know.
Like for example, your brain has to reconfigure in one particular way for Chinese and another way for English. And because it's formed that way for Chinese mode A, and that's when you form
till
emotional
a certain point.
Till
right.
a certain point and then you
But that's
switch.
Your emotional, say, center. And then you switch to English. And then if you want to re-access that emotional center, you got to go back to Chinese.
Yeah.
That's one way
right
to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one way.
Well, and then if you think, yeah. The different, I feel like the main way we're talking about language acquisition is different from, like, you know, people who, as adults, learn languages or do Rosetta Stone or whatever, is that
right.
is that concurrent with language development, we are developing as humans.
Yeah.
So there's like really basic biological things happening in our brains and our hearts and our bodies that are happening concurrent and being affected by
whatever.
And affecting
mm-hmm.
the language that
mm-hmm.
is also developing. Whereas once you're an adult and you're just like acquiring language, it's a really different, it has a really different effect, I feel like, on your internal life. Like it's not nearly as reciprocal.
It's not a...
It doesn't affect your internal life as
right.
much, you know.
Right.
But to be,
it's a skill as opposed to part of you.
Yeah, I mean, to have language coincide with, you know, physical development, with like emotional, psychological development, and intellectual development, not around language, you know, be so intertwined together, it makes I think a huge impact on like how you're shaped as a person, like how you think, you know, and your survival tactics, how you choose to thrive in the world.
I see.